Pieces come and go, and I'm forever grateful. Come and tell me long and slow exactly what I wait for. Better times, yeah, better times. Somehow I don't believe it. I built a house up long ago just to up and leave it.
Today's podcast concept comes direct from the minds of our editors. Pheasants Forever Journal editor Tom Carpenter, national treasure that he is, and Quail Forever Journal editor Ryan Sparks, punching his frequent podcaster card.
I get a free one here pretty soon.
Working his way towards being a national treasure. this concept is going to be a fun one, and we have not, outside of a couple of emails, we have not pre-gamed this at all, so it's going to be super spontaneous, free-flowing, and I think this is going to be a really fun conversation. This episode is your Upland Book Club episode of On the Wing podcast. All three of us love pheasants, quail, all species of grouse, all species of quail for that matter. The uplands where these birds live, as well as the bird hunting, bird dogs that we all work towards with the organization and the habitat that we do at Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. And we all love the written word. We've each prepared our top five books every bird hunter should read as part of this Upland Book Club. And I'm looking around the room, and Ryan has five.
I got one more.
You got one more?
Yeah.
Carp has a couple. I know I have significantly more than five. I have some that I couldn't find that I think I've lent out to people that are going to hit my top five list as well.
Maybe we'll do a bonus lightning round.
15 plus books. Maybe there'll be some overlap. Like maybe some more.
You ever done a 5-hour podcast before?
That is one of my concerns, is this one could go long.
Well, I was doing the math. You could talk about all these books. I mean, we're looking at each other's stacks, and you can see, you can count the books. Well, 15 books. Well, you could talk easily 10 minutes each. That's 150 minutes, 2.5 hours. So it'll almost be a lightning round anyway.
Well, one ground rule that I think is important is we can't give away like the entire story as we talk about the books. Because part of this, I think, is to inspire people to, you know, get out to their used bookstore or Amazon.com or wherever and pick up a Upland-oriented book to read in the as we all get energized about the upcoming season. Before we dive into the book, you know, one by one, so I want to make a statement and I want your reaction to it.
Okay.
So I, as I was looking through books and thinking about it, I don't believe that there has yet been written a book oriented around the uplands that is at the level of Norman MacLean's A River Runs Through It, or Shoeless Joe's, W.P. Kinsella's Shoeless Joe. So A River Runs Through It, what that meant to fly fishing, and subsequently a movie, right? The Brad Pitt movie that sort of captured pop culture and changed the face of fly fishing, in my opinion. Yeah. I think W.P. Kinsella's book Shoeless Joe, which led to the movie Field of Dreams, from a baseball perspective, romanticized baseball in a way that hadn't ever been done before. And to me, at least, I don't feel like I've read a book about upland bird hunting that has yet reached that pinnacle, which I think is exciting in some ways, because there is an opportunity for somebody, maybe even around this room, to take a stab at that. What's your reaction? Carp, I could see you're thinking about that. What's your reaction? Is there a book out there that matches A River Runs Through It?
Absolutely not, but there's there's literature out there that does chapters, essays, collections, what we call it, collections. And there's Upland book. There's Upland content within certain books. Mm-hmm. I think the closest I've ever seen is probably Thomas McGuane and An Outside Chance.
Mm-hmm. I haven't read that. Have you, Ryan?
I have. He's got another one, The Heart of the Game. That's incredible.
Well, that's a story in An Outside Chance, which is the anthology of short stories. And I agree, The Heart of the Game is probably one of, it's not Upland. Well, there's some Upland hunting in it, but it's, so I agree that the book isn't there that equates to A River Runs Through It, which is one of the finest pieces of literature ever written.
And I recognize that, you know, both the examples were augmented, the literature was augmented by a movie.
Yes.
With incredible star power. A River Runs Through It with Brad Pitt, Field of Dreams with Kevin Costner and James Earl Jones.
Yeah. And beautifully done.
And I think they're both Oscar nominees, maybe, or at least in the commerce. I mean, they were
cultural touchstones for sure.
Yeah. And so a book was the genesis to a movie, which led to kind of an awakening of fly fishing or baseball in a very romantic way that I don't think has quite yet happened in the bird hunting world. What's your reaction, Ryan?
Well, when I think of A River Runs Through It and how that really surged people into fly fishing, and we're talking about fly fishing and baseball here, and I think fly fishing and baseball are a lot easier for a general public or a wider audience to understand and wrap their head around.
And enter into.
And I think this stack of books all these stacks of books that are sitting around us, one thing that a lot of the authors are dealing with constantly is trying to explain why they hunt and what it is about hunting and what it is about killing and putting food on your own table that is so engrossing. And I think a lot of the authors struggle to explain it to themselves a lot of times. So to try to explain that to someone else seems like a stretch. But these are the best that I found for sure.
All right. One other thing, again, to just tease the listener until we get into the book by book. I think it's informative for listeners to know each of our own sensibilities and tastes when it comes to what we like to read. So, Ryan, we'll start with you with this one. Like, what captures your passion around reading? What sorts of authors outside of bird hunting do you enjoy? What elements are the most important to you? In other words, stage setting, plot, character development, sense of play. Like, give the listener a sense of when you're picking the books, like where your point of view on what you enjoy comes from.
Yeah, and the way that I've read over the years has changed drastically. I think back to graduate school when I was reading almost exclusively nonfiction books all the time, and I studied environmental history, and you're talking about very dense histories, and I wasn't reading any fiction, and then I got so burnt out on that all I wanted to read was fiction, and at that point I got to where I would pick an author, and I would just read everything they had ever written. I'd read everything. I'd read the letters that they wrote, collections of essays. And now my reading is very eclectic. I will read a hunting book, then I might read a cookbook, then I might read a book of poetry. And when I'm laying in bed at night and I'm reading, I might read all those things in one night. I've got a collection of poetry right now by Mary Oliver. I'll read two or three poems. I'll read an essay out of a collection of hunting essays. And then I might sit down and read a couple chapters out of, right now I'm reading Wendell Berry's, the Unsettling of America. So I think it's good to just kind of keep it fresh, cause it keeps me, I find I read more when I can continually, mix it up. I'll say also just to think back of your last point too, I think the best, maybe the reason there hasn't been a River Runs Through It or an upland hunting version of A River Runs Through It, is that I think the best writing about hunting isn't necessarily about hunting. It's the, it uses hunting as kind of a framework to look at larger themes or bigger things in our life, but it's maybe not necessarily like a hunting book.
I hear that. Tell what one thing, circling back to what you like to read, what's most important to you in writing? Is it characters, plot? Is it, you can't pick out one thing, you like the sum of the parts? Like, what, where are you at?
It depends on what it is and kind of what genre. I think, you know, one, it has to be authentic. You know, poetry is a good example. I love poetry, but there's not a lot of poetry that I love, if that makes sense. It's sort of like a either I hate it or I love it type of thing. Other type of writing, you know, if it just has to flow, I can't stumble through it. You know, it has to be enjoyable. It can't be too heady. It can't seem like contrived and forced and flowery. You know, there's something about certain writers just have a certain style that just draw you in, and you can kind of live in their world for a little bit.
So what I'm hearing is voice is super important to you.
Yeah, whatever you want to call that. Voice, personality, unique ideas. And I think those are a lot of things that are probably going to come out in my stack here.
Carp, what's your flavor?
Well, that's all real deep. I'm watching Dallas Cowboy Cheerleaders right now. So that's my level of literature. No, I'm just kidding.
What? You're watching Dallas Cowboy Cheerleaders. Is this a show on Netflix?
You don't know what Dallas Cowboy Cheerleaders is?
I mean, I know what it, generally. I don't know what specifically
my wife talking about. You guys aren't with current events. My wife started watching it, and it's the drama of Dallas Cowboy Cheerleaders and trying out. It's a reality.
Is it like a Bravo?
It's reality show. I think it's on Netflix.
And you are watching this, aren't you?
When I come in from my pollinator garden, I'm like, oh, Dallas Cowboy Cheerleaders.
His name in to ghostwrite the book.
I'm definitely closer to reading poetry than I am watching Dallas Cowboy Cheerleaders.
I
know you're just teasing.
There's a lot of what I like to call drama in some of our books, and you know, I think when we get into the books I have on my stack, it's going to be a lot different. You know, Ryan talks perfectly about how a lot of these upland books or books about upland hunting, we haven't got the A River Runs Through It book yet. And I don't know if we can. And I don't know if there will ever be that effect, because to me, the barrier to entry to upland hunting is just so much higher. And we all work on that every day. The three people sitting on this table, we try and reduce those barriers to upland hunting. But if we're looking for that impact on the world, like what elevated fly fishing to really almost a cultural emplacement, it was there. I don't think we're ever going to have an upland book that'll do that. I enjoy the books. I know there's some books in your stacks here that try and get at the meaning of hunting and life. And I think we all have our own choices there of what that literature, and some people who could be readers listening to this podcast might not care as much about. I really don't find meaning in I hunt. It doesn't have to be the meaning of my life, and I think that's what some of the upland books try and do. And I don't think you can. Hunting is one aspect of life. Believe it or not, I have other aspects to my life. We'll see that difference when I get in. When I get into my books right now, my bedstand is Annie Prue. If you've never read Annie Prue.
I recognize the name, but I don't know the.
She wrote The Shipping News, which was
won
a Pulitzer Prize.
Yes, I have that. Okay.
And
another made into a movie.
Yes, and there's a three book series called Wyoming Stories. It's three sets of her short stories, and I'm on number three right now. So that's my book club recommendation.
Any favorite elements of writing? Voice, character development, plot, setting, that is super important to you?
I generally gear toward rural type settings. I think that really I grew up reading Faulkner, and I remember thinking I'm going to be the Faulkner of the North. So something like Faulkner, if you think back to that rural setting, and the characters.
Yeah.
And it sort of ties back to some characters in my ancestry too. Mm-hmm. So,
so perspective on the first question, I'm a hopeless optimist and I do think that there's potential in a place for a river runs through it of the uplands. You know, I think it's going to come through a story with connected to a dog.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I think it's out there. I don't have the idea yet. But I think there will be that will be written someday that will change the landscape and open people's eyes to what we all love. And I think it comes through the dog and opens up into the sense of place. Because the uplands, you know, I've said this on the podcast many, many a time, upland birds bring us to beautiful places. I wouldn't have ended up in Sonoyta, Arizona, looking for Montezuma or Mearns quail, whatever you go by. I wouldn't have walked through a desert looking for a scaled quail if I wasn't following a bird dog. A kid growing up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, like, why would you go to the desert? There's nothing there. Then you go into the desert and you're like, oh, this is magnificent. It's alive with life that I never knew. And then reverse, you grow up in the desert and you're like, I would never go to the UP. It's just a snarl of trees and mosquitoes. And then, you know, you go there on October 3rd and it's a fruity pebble forest of multicolors and the smells, and it's my favorite place in the world.
A fruity pebble forest.
Yeah,
you I like that. I like that.
And so, and you think about places I haven't gone but lived through the photos of the Pheasants Forever Journal or the Quail Forever Journal, the Snake River Canyon in Idaho, you know, chukar hunting in the Owyhees. You know, I think the dog brings us to a sense of place, and I love sense of place in writing. That is, writing for me, reading for me is an escape of, you know, tapping into my imagination and living a life that you lose in the day to day, right? So I love sense of place. I also love characters that I empathize with and I can build a relationship with through a series. In other words, so we talked about what we're reading. You know, I like both of you, you know, you mentioned a lot of different things that you read. I do as well. Like, you know, you can only read so much of a certain topic, right? And then you bounce around and read other things. And I really love reading series books like the John Sanford, Lucas Davenport series, Virgil Flowers series, also from John Sanford, C.J. Box, Joe Pickett series.
Stephen Hunter.
I don't know Stephen Hunter.
Oh, great. The Bob Lee Swagger series, where it's a family of, you know, one of them is a sheriff, one of them was a sniper in Vietnam, and it's sort of along the vein of like Tom Clancy or something like that. Yeah.
So Craig Johnson's Longmire series is another one. You know, so there's, I love the, in many of those, William Kent Krueger, another Minnesota guy, writes about the northern Minnesota in a series of characters. So it's a combination of a sense of place and character development that you can see their entire life story through different books. So I really get connected to those. But so that, you know, influences some of my choices. And, you know, I was, you know, full transparency, Carp, to your point, is like, you know, as we set this concept up, I was thinking that literary meaning of life through the uplands sort of books, that's where my mindset was. And there's some out there that attempt to do that. And then it was like, I'm going to throw some curveballs in there because they can't all be like that. And you start opening it up, and there are a lot of, and I think, Ryan, you brought this up. It's like, because we originally talked about top five bird hunting books or something a little bit more narrow, and you like, well, let's do upland books, upland-oriented books.
Books upland hunters should read.
Yeah, yeah, because it's a little broader and doesn't have to be about, well, I, you know, went through that windy day, busted the cattails. You know, it isn't a how-to. It's a little bit more, on some level, some of them are deeper than that, and some of them might not be. So.
One interesting fact that I had written down, and I haven't independently verified this, but I believe it to be true. There has been more written about hunting and fishing than every other sport combined.
Hmm.
And I really think that's because hunting and fishing are a lot more than sports. And so I think that gets back to sort of your meaning of life comments or something. There's something about hunting and fishing that evokes that from us, because I think it makes us think about our place on the land and how we fit into the landscape and our relationship with other creatures on the earth. And, yeah, these are, I think this list, is going to do a good job of exploring that for anybody that wants to dive in.
I see some overlaps. All right. We'll start with carp. Before we do, shout out to Onyx, proud supporter of Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. And they want to thank all of the Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever listeners and members who give back to the birds and the habitat we all love to hunt in the places they call home. Go to the preview text in this episode, click on the link, and you can get a free month of Onyx Hunt. And if you use the code PFQF, when you go to that link, you can get 20% off your membership with Onyx. And a portion of your membership purchase will go back to supporting Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever's wildlife habitat mission. All right. There was a preamble there, 20 minutes to get us into the topic. The National Treasure kicks us off. Round one. What is the number five book on your top five?
Okay, so we're going.
We're going to go in reverse order.
You're going to make us go in order?
Well, it doesn't. Like, you save your save your favorite for last, okay. I guess, is okay. the point. You don't have to rank them, but save the favorite for last.
I've got them. I'm going the way I stacked them. I can't.
You can't put on. Do you have your favorite? You know what your favorite is.
Not of these. No.
Okay. All right. Just tell us what's first on the list.
I got to be honest. I took a different track with most things. I take a different path through the field.
You went for a tootle.
I went for a tootle, and my tootle concentrated less on the meaning of hunting and life and our meaning to the land, and more on how can I become a better hunter? How do I get birds? How do I expand my bird hunting horizons? So my first one is a book from my past, back when I was a couple career steps ago when I was at the Hunting and Fishing Library, and we published over 80 hunting, fishing, fly fishing books, amongst others in my time there. And one of my favorites is just called, big surprise, Upland Game Birds. It is 160 pages. It's filled with photographs. It's almost all photographs. It profiles every species of upland bird in North America, along with hunting tips. And we had a hell of a time. Good time.
So was there a singular author, or this is a collection of you and a whole bunch of people?
Multiple authors. Huh. My brother, we went out and hunted with my brother for sage grouse in Utah. We went all over, and we got Huns on a southwestern Minnesota. And so bottom line for this book is, you can, I guarantee you, Google it up, Upland Game Birds, the Hunting and Fishing Library.
What's the year?
Oh, I suppose it was published in 93. I got to look here. 95. Pretty close. Wow.
Yeah.
So it's 30 years old now, and it looks it. But the way we hunt Huns, the way you hunt sharptails, the way you'd go after a prairie chicken, what the hell is a ptarmigan? That hasn't changed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's I'd say it's, you know.
Yeah, there's a ton of photos.
It's 80% pictures. So if you're an upland hunter, you'll get a kick out of it. And if you're experienced, if you say, I want to go hunt valley quail,
mm-hmm.
you'll get the basic tips in this book, and what's the habitat, how do I hunt them, and if you've never hunted upland birds before, and we hope someone's listening who's thinking about getting into it, this, you have to have this book.
Yeah, it looks like a very practical, like something you would pass on to a new hunter, or even that, you know, 12 to 14 year old who's just enthusiastic about getting involved.
Yep.
You probably, that's something you probably find on eBay nowadays.
Or, yeah, you could find it on eBay or Amazon would have it, I'm sure. Yeah. So that's
number one.
That's number one.
You got us going. Sparks, yep. What's number one on your list? Or number five?
I refuse to rank these books.
Oh, wow. Yeah, we're not ranking.
No way. No way.
See, just what five I have to
books
deal
every
with
upland
is...
hunter should read.
All right. Tell us what your first submission is.
Yeah, one I want to get to before anybody else steals it from me. A Hunter's Road by Jim Fergus.
There we have. You sunk my battleship.
Oh, you did have that hiding in there.
I did have it. Go ahead.
So people might be familiar with John Steinbeck's Travels with Charlie. It's sort of Travels with Charlie, but with a shotgun. Fergus is an amazing writer. What the premise of the book is, he sort of, from September through February, travels all over the country with his bird dog in a camper and just hunts public land. And, I mean, this was 30 years ago. I mean, think about what that would be like before Onyx, before GPS. He's just striking out on his own and doing this. And I just wrote down the list of states that he hits from September through February. Colorado, Wyoming, Montana, Idaho, South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, Ohio, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine, New York, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Louisiana, Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, New Mexico, Arizona. If that doesn't sound like a dream trip, and probably more hunting than a lot of us will do in a lifetime, in one season. And along the way, he visits some amazing people. He uses fictionalized names, but you can't tell me that one of those chapters he's not hunting with Jim Harrison in Montana.
He's hunting with Jim Harrison.
Absolutely. And he's just a fantastic writer. And this, you know, we're talking about people trying to write an upland hunting book for a popular audience. This is one for me that, you know, it's a great book whether you've gone upland hunting or if you have no experience with it all, I think you can connect with him. And that's one thing that he does a lot is tries to explain what it is about hunting that draws him in. And, you know, hunting, as we all know, just it's not about killing. And he's trying to explain that to people. And I think he does a fantastic job of it. I won't go into really any more than that, but he also, I mean, at the end, his dog, he lists out 21 species that his dog, Sweetser, gets along the way. And the very last one is New York City street pigeon. So it also ends with a great recommended reading list. So I imagine a lot of people listening to this might be interested in, you know, discovering new upland reads. I have not read all the books at the end, but by the ones that I do recognize, I think it's a fantastic recommended reading list for somebody to pursue. Great book.
I will continue. I'll expand upon it because, like I mentioned, you sunk my battleship in a good way. This is what I had as my number one, my favorite upland bird hunting oriented. But have you read it, Kurt?
Yes, long time ago, but it's on my shelf.
I keep a thank you card that the first copy I received of this book was sent to me by Nick Hoffman, Nick's Wild Ride. We went on a grouse hunt, then a pheasant hunt together in season one of his TV show. And he sent me this book, which I had never read, in a very sweet thank you card. And I have subsequently sent this book to probably two dozen other people as a gift. It's not perfect, but it's very entertaining. Like you mentioned there, it's filled with characters that some he mentions, some he doesn't, but you figure out Jim Harrison is in there. Guy de la Delveldine.
Valdine, yeah.
He's in there. I think Tom McQueen is in there. If I recall correctly, I might be wrong.
I think he is. He just uses fictionalized names for all these people. I think Stephen Bodio might be in there as well.
I think Gordon Gillian is in there by name, who is a
Can you imagine going around the country and hunting with these people in a single season? Like, I would be happy to hunt with one of those people in a lifetime, let alone all of them in the course of one season. I mean, incredible.
It's a terrific book. It moves real fast. It was number one on my list. A Hunter's Road, Jim Fergus. There you go. Carp, what's up next for you?
Well, we've brought up many of the greats of upland writing, and my next one is one of them, Ben O. Williams. So my second book is Western Wings, Hunting Upland Birds of the Northern Plains. Probably did as much for introducing people to hunting the West as any other book has, plus it's Ben O. Williams.
I'm surprised. Do you have Winston in the stack? What the heck, Carp? Didn't you write the foreword for Winston?
I did.
Did you write the foreword for this one, too?
No, not Western.
Okay. Tom McQuaid. Okay.
I couldn't compete with who wrote the foreword for this one.
All right. Western Wings you went
no
with
way.
Over Winston.
By the way, Ben Williams always tells me a story. Picture this of barbecue, a lunch, post-hunt, and it was him, Thomas McGuane, Jim Harrison, and I think Rick Bass. You can imagine having lunch with those four and having drinks after a hunt. So I could have my whole stack, Ben Williams. And Ryan and I want to do lightning round bonus books afterwards. I have another Ben Williams that I would have on that round. So if you have never read Ben O. Williams, he's a fine writer. He's introduced many legendary. He's introduced many, many people to upland hunting, inspired them. He writes in clear, simple, straightforward terms, and he inspires. And Western Wings inspired, I think, a generation to get out west and learn how to hunt before we had the true power of the internet to help you, you know, not only find places to hunt, but get inspired and learn. And that's what this does. Huns, sharptails, prairie chickens, sage grouse, dog work. How do I travel and get out there? If you've never gone west to hunt, it's a must-read book. And it's also, if you've never read Ben O. Williams before, it's an introduction to a master of the craft.
Yep, one of the all-time great upland writers, for sure.
Britneys and Huns are his favorites.
Yeah, and my, as a lot of listeners know, my first Britney was out of Ben's line, out of New Mexico. Mother out of New Mexico, and the dad was Winston, the subject of Winston. So Ben and I go way back. I, in fact, mentioned him in the super issue on my last page article I wrote about being kind to coveys. And I first learned it from Ben O. Williams, and I tell the story in my last page column about the very first day I ever hunted with Ben 30-some years ago. We got up in the morning. We just lollygagged around. He had 16 dogs. You're taking care of dogs. You're packing lunch. Oh, we got to go fix this fence out here. At about 10 o'clock, he's like, yeah, let's go. And then we hunted, and we had a swing in the morning, a swing in the afternoon. There's about an hour left. We're sitting in the truck, and I'm just like thinking, okay, Golden Hour, what are we going to do? Where are we going to hunt? And Ben says, well, that was a great day, Tom. And I'm like, what? And he's like, yeah, we're not going to hunt these birds for the last hour of the day. They need to covey back up. They need to feed. We're going to take it easy on them. That's the type of person Ben O. Williams is. And I highly recommend Western Wings, not only for your knowledge, but it also you get the real – Bob, you talked a lot about sense of place. You get sense of place from this. Ben knows that you're not just coming west to kill birds. You're coming west to experience these places where these birds are. And he'll tell you how to do it via his anecdotes and stories.
What's the year of that one?
I'm losing some.
You got leaves in your book.
Sage grouse.
Yeah. Oh, is there
people listening
there?
To the podcast can't see Carp's stack of books, but the fonts and the colors of the dust jackets, I mean, all the books look like they came out of like a 1975 library.
And
there's
got
leaves falling out and feathers.
Yeah, there's some Milo or something.
It's
in
amazing.
It. What do you got?
I think they're asters.
Okay.
Certainly they came from a hunt with Ben O. Williams.
Huh.
I want to have the tailgate lunch with Tom Carpenter and Ben O. Williams.
This has been published many times.
This is inscribed
from Ben. I think
there we go. It's got to be down there.
1998, but I think this is a second printing.
Western Wings, Western Ben Wings. O. Williams.
Hunting upland birds of the northern plains.
Mr. Sparks, I recognize that one as well.
Yeah, so not necessarily an upland hunting book, but definitely a hunting book. It's A Hunter's Heart, Honest Essays on Blood Sport, and it is collected by David Peterson. This is a book that I read my freshman year of college, and it's really the first book that I read. I just grabbed it off the shelf at a Barnes & Noble, and it's really the first book that got me thinking about hunting, not thinking about, you know, how to or where to, but maybe thinking about the why of hunting. And it's also was my exposure to a huge list of heavy hitters. And I wrote down a few people that have essays in here, and there's a lot more worth mentioning, but I mean, A.B. Guthrie, Ed Abbey, Terry Tempest Williams, John Mattson, Jim Posowitz, Thomas McGuane, Rick Bass, Jim Harrison, Stephen Bodio, Jim Fergus. It goes on. Barry Lopez. It goes on and on and on and on. This book was really my first exposure to all those people. So this is, it's to think of all the books that have come from reading just these essays in here. And these are sort of the opposite of your books, Carp, really. These are dense essays that you can, they're not light reads. That doesn't mean they're not enjoyable. You can sink your teeth into them. A few standouts, one that we had already talked about was McGuane, Heart of the Game, Why Men Hunt by John Mattson. And my favorite, I mean, is Pete Dunne's essay, Before the Echo. It's only 4 pages long. It almost takes my breath away. Mm. It's so good.
Pete Dunne.
Mm. I'll just read the first paragraph. It's short. I won't go any longer than that. I think the book is worth picking up just for this essay alone. He starts the essay, "When I was young, I was a hunter, walking wooded hillsides with confident steps and a gun in my hands. I knew the blur of wings, the rocketing form, and the great moment that only hunters know, when all existence draws down to 2 points in a single line, and the universe holds its breath, and what may be and what will be meet and become one before the echo returns to its source." And it's sort of that intangible why that you can't put your finger on, that's somewhere between the moment you pull the trigger and before you see the bird fly off or drop. It lies in there somewhere. And
that's beautiful.
4 pages of just incredible, incredible writing. And it stands out among a plethora of amazing essays in there. So definitely, I give this one as gifts a lot too. It's upland hunting. It's big game. There's a couple people that I think maybe might sway towards almost anti-hunting, but they have good, you know, a good argument that it's worth reading.
I wrote down A Hunter's Heart, Read Again. I have that in my bookshelf. It's great. But I also listened to Ryan read that list off of those names, those writers. And I believe fully in my heart that the what hunting and fishing means to people who can also write produces some of the greatest literature there is. And I also believe that given that list of names, and it really struck me when Ryan read it, is that I think if we were going to have an upland book that rivals A River Runs Through It, it would have already happened. Because I don't think we're going to meet. I don't think we're going to come up with writers.
Those aren't upland writers. Those aren't hunting writers. That is like a list of some of the greatest American writers. Period. So they did a good job, though.
Yeah, I also have that book of essays right above my home office bookshelf. So that's an excellent one to get, A Hunter's Heart. Let's look at the year on that one, because this one also is a few years old. 1996, A Hunter's Heart.
Coming on 30.
All right, so I split the difference between really heavy and more practical on my next selection. I wanted to put in one of my serial kind of series authors in here, and John Sanford has a mention of Pheasants Forever in a Virgil Flowers book, but there really wasn't anything beyond that. There's a Pheasants Forever sticker, I think, in one of the books. I went with C.J. Box's Endangered book, which is it's probably a 5-6 years old. I don't have it here because I lent it out. I think my parents have that one right now because I read C.J. Box and Craig Johnson, Longmire's voraciously. Like the instant they come out, I have it, read it, and they send it along to my mom and dad, and they both read them. And it again, I love the character development and the sense of place. Both of those books set in Wyoming, which is a place that's at the top of my bird hunting bucket list, which I've never hunted in Wyoming, and it's absolutely because of those two writers. Mm. And I put the C.J. Box is Endangered as my second pick. The plot revolves around a flock of sage grouse. And it doesn't have a whole lot to do with upland bird hunting, but it is it's a super fun read. And if you haven't, if you're looking for something, I find myself reading at certain times of the year more than others, right? Like, that mud season of winter into spring, and I can knock down, a C.J. Box book in like two nights. And just go back and start at the beginning of the series, but make sure you read Endangered. That's a fun one that's got sage grouse involved. All right, number three on your list from the National Treasure, carp.
All right, we're going back to practical.
I like it.
This book, okay, I already looked up the number because Bob has an entry, the year.
The year.
This was first published in 1985.
Okay.
So we're coming on 40 years.
The year the Royals won the World Series.
And 1985 also happens to be the year I graduated from college. It also happens to be the year I moved to Minnesota and started my trek to be what I truly am, now a proud Minnesotan, but still a Packer fan. but growing up in southwestern Wisconsin, we had some quail. We had ruffed grouse. Mm. And I looked back in my journals, and I shot a total of 4 ruffed grouse between the age of 12 and 18 in conjunction with rabbit hunts. Oh, there's a grouse. Boom.
So you know how many birds you shot at the age of 12.
Oh, yeah.
When does your journal start?
When I was 6 years old, my first hunt.
Squirrel. And you have that today.
Yeah, it was a squirrel hunt with my father when I would turn 6.
Wow.
On November 7th, would have been 1968.
It's so funny, like you were talking about how those great writers, there's something about how they're drawn to hunting and fishing and writing about it. Even at the age of 6 years old, you came back from that hunt and you knew there was something so important about that you had to write it down. Yep. At 6 years old. That's and really cool.
Do you journal?
I do a little bit, not as meticulous maybe as Carp, but I do keep a journal.
It's evolved for me. I mean, when I first started out, it was day this what we got this when maybe one line, and then it's steadily become at least a page for every time I hunt. But So back to the story. Why is this book so important to me, and why do I think it's so good? Is when I moved to Minnesota, I'm like, wow, I'm going to have to become a real grouse hunter. And so I got a grouse hunter's guide. Bob, I don't even know if you even remember. Do you know what that logo is? It's on a sticker on
BB and two evergreens. I don't know what that means.
It's Burger Brothers.
Oh, okay. That was not something I've heard of. Burger Brothers, our old coworker John Edstrom worked there, but
it was an outdoor.
Wasn't familiar.
Three location outdoor store. I moved up there, I needed a job, and they thought, wow, here's a kid from Wisconsin who hunts. And I worked at Burger Brothers.
You did too, huh?
I bought this with my employee discount. So Grouse Hunter's Guide by Dennis Walrod, and it taught me all about ruffed grouse and how to hunt them. Now, maybe it was written in 1985, but I offer that ruffed grouse and ruffed grouse hunting, is the approach is about the same now as it was then. We talk a lot about, I just talked about western wings. There's a lot of hunters, they might live west, they might live south, they might live east and want to come shoot a lot of grouse. Come to the Midwest, hunt Minnesota, hunt Michigan, both the northern lower peninsula, and become a youper like Bob, hunt Wisconsin. You've got, I don't know, I'd say, what would you say, Bob? There's 20 million acres of public land across that swath. You can come up here and literally hunt wherever the hell you want.
Yeah. Yeah, and the thing that, you know, when you're pheasant hunting, because you can see the horizon, you see other hunters. When you're grouse hunting, you don't know what's around the other corner. Yeah. So you do have the sense that there's nobody around.
Yes. And so if you want to come and hunt, if you want to learn how to hunt grouse, if you're a new hunter, or you want to come to the Northwoods and hunt grouse, which I recommend, I think we can all agree at this table. I mean, Bob is a dyed-in-the-wool rough grouse hunter. I'm a woodcock hunter and occasionally shoot a rough grouse while I hunt woodcock. But if you're going to hunt rough grouse, I think Grouse Hunter's Guide is going to teach you, one, about rough grouse, two, about their habitat and where to find them, and three, some techniques for shooting them. Because like most things, you just can't – you can come up and walk and figure it out. But if you're coming off, if you're going to come hunt rough grouse, you might as well have a little education.
Mm-hmm. You want to talk about a landscape that's so different, yes, and experiencing something new, that if you've never been in the grouse woods, it is unlike any other type of upland hunting you will ever do.
And it's got good stories in it too. I mean, if you're like, yeah, I've always thought about rough grouse hunting or rough grouse hunting in a place where you might get 25, 30 flushes a day, you know, like you can in some places in Minnesota or North Michigan and stuff like that. This will inspire you to get grouse hunting, and it'll educate you too. So 1985, Berger Brothers, Grouse Hunter's Guide by Dennis Walrod.
Another eBay. Search for that one.
And, Brian, I want to see this typography on a story in Quail Forever Journal. Mm. It's very 1985.
I like it.
We're not a visual medium here, but you can imagine what we're looking at older books here for me.
Good-looking dog with a grouse in its mouth on the cover, too.
Yeah, I think a French Brittany got that bird, and they posted it with that pointer.
All right, what's up next for you, Ryan?
Okay, I said I wasn't going to pick a number one if you forced me, but since I'm not forced, if I had to pick one, it would be Pheasants of the Mind by Datis Proper. And that's probably weird coming from the Quail Forever Journal editor, but he really makes a good argument that pheasants might be the ultimate upland game bird.
Wait a minute, we gotta hear that again.
Now, I said he makes that argument.
Yeah, but you said it with real emphasis, well, and vigor.
You know, you hear people joke about ditch parrots and they're not native and, you know,
disco
they're goofy
chickens
and they run. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I mean, he does make a very good argument. And if you just open it up to the table of contents, and I do have a nice
You sign. Get assigned a copy.
I write,
wow.
And I write like crazy in all my books, and this one does not have a scratch in it. It's a
you got some post-it notes.
Some unmarking post-it notes. Yeah. yeah. But if you looked at the table of contents and you hadn't read a word, you might think it's a very cut and dry how-to book. But really, it is a philosophy of pheasant hunting, and it's. It's just so unlike anything I've read before it or since it. He has such a unique voice and a unique style, and he's intelligent, and the way he thinks about his hunting is incredible. He's funny. It's lyrical. It has some of my favorite quotes about both pheasants. He writes about quail. He writes about rough grouse, but he's also just a fantastic writer overall. He wrote a lot about fly fishing. It's probably the one book that I recommend the most that people haven't heard of that I give out as a gift to people.
Carp, really you good. Were shaking your head in the affirmative, too. You've read it?
I knew it would come up, so I didn't pick it.
Yeah.
And if it didn't, it would have been on my bonus list. Yeah. So thanks, yeah. Ryan.
Yeah.
It's a great book.
It is great. It's one line that he has that I think if it summarizes up his argument the most, it's other birds hold as close, they flush as wild, they run almost as far, they live in cover almost as difficult, but no other bird does it all so often as the pheasant.
Hmm.
And he writes about hunting pheasants with pointing dogs and hunting pheasants without a dog, which he calls fishing. You're a pheasant fisherman if you hunt pheasants without a dog because you're sort of acting on faith. He talks about hunting them with flushing dogs. And it also, I mean, I can't not also read my favorite quote about Bob White Quill because I kind of force it in wherever I can. I think it's appeared in the journal at least once by now. But Bob White's made the rules, and the rules made the dogs, and the dogs made the trainers, and by now the game is bigger than any of them. Just such a damn good line.
What year was that one written?
Ooh, let me look.
Because that's also an older book.
1990.
Okay, not that old.
1990, yep.
All right. Up next for me is another one that I don't have a copy in front of me. I think I gave it to Billy Hildebrand. I think it's up at his cabin right now. East of the Mountains by David Gutterson. You may recognize that name. He also wrote Snow Falling on Cedars, which, again, another movie.
It was in my lightning round pick.
Was it?
Yep.
East of the Mountains. There was a movie made with Tom Skerritt.
Really?
And Mira Sorvino. I don't know if it was actually released in theaters or just a streaming movie. And it's that movie was only, I think it was during COVID. It was only a couple of years old.
Really?
The premise of the book, I believe he's got a Brittany, if I recall correctly. Have you read East of the Mountains?
No.
You like it. Older guy surgeon knows he has cancer, and his family doesn't. And this is the story of he knows what's going to happen to him, and he wants to go on a bird hunt. And then I'll leave it at that. And it's a very dramatic meaning of life book that connects bird hunting and love of a dog and wild places and roots, goes back to where he lived. I think it's set in Oregon, if I remember correctly. Again, I don't have the book because I lent it.
I almost brought it in. It was on my short list for sure.
But again, it's a very, very, it's not all about upland bird hunting, but it's a component of upland bird hunting that has a great character development with sense of place. And it is a meaning of life kind of deep dive. So if you're into that, read the book. And if you want something quicker, check out the movie. Because the movie very much mirrors.
East of the Mountains movie?
Mm-hmm. East of the Mountains.
That's a movie too, like Snow Falling on Cedars.
Yep. Okay. Yep. It's Tom Skerritt. Mira Sorvino is his daughter. Yeah, his daughter, that character. So, yeah.
It's another one, too, that, you know, a popular audience can enjoy. You don't necessarily have to hunt to enjoy the book.
Does East of the Mountains, the movie, does it have the bird hunting in it?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, there's bird. I mean, it's not a ton.
Could that, if it came back, be the one?
It's
that introduced, brings it's it, a or little, is it too sad?
It's too sad.
Yeah, yeah.
It's.
But so as River Runs Through It.
It is, yes, it's imperfect. I mean, it's very good. It's fun. It's just, it doesn't quite get there, in my opinion.
Okay.
But I got on my top
as a
five.
As a movie, or as?
Both.
Both, okay.
Yeah. I got on my top five.
Well, I've got it. What do I have next to East of the Mountains on my thing here? A big asterisk.
Big to check it out.
Yeah, exactly. So
yeah, it's definitely worth checking out.
All right. Number four for you, Carp.
All right. We're going farther backwards. You ready for 1975?
Black and white photo on the back. I love it.
This is pre-Sparks, before you were even a glint in your mom and dad's eyes.
So I had Pheasants of the Mind. Picture this. Picture Carp. I have Pheasants of the Mind in my right hand, and I have Hunting the Long-Tailed Bird in my left. And I said, Somebody's going to bring pheasants of the mind. And I brought a lot, the Hunting the Long-Tailed Bird. So Hunting the Long-Tailed Bird by Bob Bell, 1975, is if you're a Midwestern pheasant hunter, and I'm saying either Dakotas, Nebraska, Kansas, Iowa, Minnesota, Western Wisconsin, anywhere in Wisconsin, if you're, this is a book of just hunting. It's good old hunting tales, but there's timeless how-to advice in here. And the hunting tales aren't, yeah, we got that rooster, and boy, I found the meaning of life when I put him in my thing.
Given, like, the choice, you go practical. You're like polar opposite between the two editors.
I love that stuff too, don't get me wrong.
I'm not being critical. It's just really fun. Like, you're two sides of a coin, just completely different.
It's like, yeah, we got that bird, and man, he was a tough sucker, and I stuffed him in my bag, and we went off for the next one.
We're going for a tootle into a hell hole.
We're tootling into another hell hole. And there's a couple of bush lights waiting for us in Scott Rawl's garage when we're done.
Hey, and, speaking of things I love.
It's all going to be cool. So anyway, Hunting the Long-Tailed Bird. It's got a great cover picture, illustration. It's a pheasant coming right at you.
That guy's going to totally miss. He's shooting underneath
it. He's aiming for the tail feathers. That's classic good. Mistake.
And but it's got it's classic. Two roosters coming out of corn stubble.
Yeah.
A guy in the background, he's got a Kmart orange vest on and his blue jeans. I mean, it's a pheasant hunter's book.
Yeah.
But and here's a chapter, how to hit him. So anyway, if you want a good old fashioned,
say it again. What is it?
Hunting the Long-Tailed Bird.
Okay. I wrote it down.
By Bob Bell.
Bob Bell.
Hawthorne Books, 1975.
Very nice.
That might be a hard one to track down, but I'm going to try.
It might be expensive, so I'm going to make sure it's into my bag when I leave. Here, I'm coming in.
So
my stack was by Ryan. It's moving this way.
Did you go practical, or did you go meaning of life next, Ryan?
I'm going to say both. I think it splits. All right. I think it splits the difference.
Okay.
I'm going to say, you know, I said earlier I read cookbooks. I'm a big cooking nerd. Pheasant, Quail, Cottontail, Upland Birds and Small Game from Field to Feast by Hank Shaw. And I've mentioned it on here before, but I really think cooking is an outdoor skill. It connects the field with your home, and I think it's really what brings hunting full circle. It's one of the reasons I love it so much. I will sit down and read cookbooks from cover to cover. Like, I know most people grab them, they flip through, ooh, this looks good. They might make some marks, and then they might cook 2, 3, 4 recipes, and that's it. I'll sit down and I'll read the introduction. I'll read the whole thing.
In Hank's book, you can sit down and read it like a book.
Yep. So he has a background as a journalist, and his skill as a writer definitely comes through in this. I think I own all of his cookbooks. They're fantastic. But if I had to pick one book for upland hunters to sort of to learn from him, because he's also a great teacher, you know, the techniques that are explained, he doesn't say brown the meat. He says, you know, add the meat a little bit at a time to the pan so it doesn't steam, and let it sit over high heat so it caramelizes. And he teaches you those techniques. So when you're in the future, when you're cooking, anytime you're browning meat, hey, you've got a trick up your sleeve that's going to make that even better. And he really teaches you how to use the whole bird, all the way from, I mean, most people, the number one cut that they're going to be familiar with is the breast. I mean, he's going to take you how to use the legs and slow cook them and braise them and make them tender and delicious. I mean, the parts that people might shy away from, like the liver and the heart, he has very approachable recipes for those things, how to take the carcasses and make some game stock with them. You know, some standout recipes in here. If you've never just plucked and brined and just done a very simple roast pheasant in the oven, you're missing out. Like, you can't call yourself a pheasant hunter if you've never eaten just a roasted pheasant. I mean, and he has a great technique. It's very simple. And then he has other recipes. I mean, General Sow's pheasant. That's a great one. My wife would slap me if I didn't mention wild turkey buffalo mac and cheese. So there's not all these highbrow recipes and stuff in there. Upland gumbo, barbecue quail, sharptail stroganoff. But it's really a book that is going to teach you how to cook and how to cook game birds specifically. Because there's parts of a game bird that need to be cooked on high heat very quickly. There's other ones that need to be cooked on low heat very slowly. And he's going to teach you all those techniques. And for me, if you're going to own one cookbook about upland hunting, this is the one I would recommend. And it's another one I give to a gift to new upland hunters as well.
And he's a tremendous friend of the organization and has been for a long time. You know, Hank, like you, I own all of Hank's cookbooks. He's been keynote speaker at National Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic. He's written for both journals and our website. That particular book, Pheasant, Quail, Cottontail, Hank has donated a portion of every book sold to this organization.
I didn't even know that.
And
it's incredible.
It's it's in the neighborhood of $20,000 that wow. book has generated for Wildlife Habitat. So that's a tremendous pick. He's a wonderful person. And, you know, I agree with you. When he sets out to write a cookbook, he wants to do what is called a category killer.
That's a good one, yeah.
And
I know what you mean.
And I think he successfully did that with Pheasant, Quail, Cottontail. In other words, some other chef looks at doing an upland game bird cookbook, and then they look at that as like, how on earth would I improve upon Hank Shaw's Pheasant, Quail, and Cottontail?
The book that all other upland game bird cooking books will be compared to.
Yeah. And General Sow's Pheasant.
Oh, if you haven't made that.
It is the let's say the recipe killer for
yeah.
all,
I think
that is
in
terrific.
It's like crack. Like you can make up, it says a portion serves four or something. I don't think my wife and I have ever made it where we haven't finished the whole thing. It's so good.
It's the number one recipe on his website for pheasant as well. It's General Sow's, it's a TSO apostrophe S, right? It's wonderful. Wonderful. So great choice.
Look, I got asterisk.
You got another one to get.
General Sow's
Pheasant.
Pheasant. Thanks, Ryan.
It's good. And it's not complicated to make. It all, once you get everything prepped, it comes together in 10 minutes, if not 5. I mean.
All right. Next up for me, I've got two. I always struggle with how to pronounce his name. Guy de la Valdine, I believe is how you pronounce it.
I think it's
it.
Valdane, but
Valdane.
And I've always said Guy, but that just teaches
me
that I'm
Guy.
Saying it wrong.
It's Guy. So Guy is from France, lived in Florida for a lot of time. Bobwhite quail hunter, hardcore. He passed away year ago or 2 years, very recently.
Within 1 to 2, yeah.
I've got the Fragrance of Grass, but I am going for the book For a Handful of Feathers. And he starts off chapter 4, "No one can have the part of me I give to my dogs. A gift as safe as loving a child, or for some as loving Christ. As part of me, I guard carefully because it bears on my sanity. My dogs forgive the asshole in me, the anger in me, the arrogance in me, the brute in me. They forgive everything I do before I forgive myself. For me, the life and death of a dog is a calendar of time passing. I dream about my dogs, but recently the dreams have been turning into nightmares." Well, we'll leave it at that, but that powerful writing. Guy has written a number of different books about bird hunting. He ran in that same Jim Harrison. In fact, Jim Harrison wrote the introduction to the book For a Handful of Feathers, was part of that group that hunted together and then would create massive feasts. They probably drank a little bit of wine, too, based on some of the stories. 1995, For a Handful of Feathers. All right.
A lot of good books from the 90s.
You're pointing it out.
Like, a lot of them have been. It's amazing.
I think we're on the final one for each of us. And I know that I see a similarity between the two of us. So, Carp, we'll let you go. I'm... it looks, based on the cover, and you can't judge a book by its cover, you've been going practical, pretty practical, 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 and then it looks like you went deep with this one, Where the Sky Began.
If you've never read John Madson, you need to.
Yeah, I haven't. Have you?
Yeah. Out okay. Home is another fantastic one.
Out Home is a collection of essays, yeah. Which actually would make my lightning round list because there are some of the all-time classic pheasant hunting stories in Out Home, mm. Or perhaps it's Up the River, a couple of John Madson's collections. I've known Chris Madson for probably coming on 35 years now, former editor at Wyoming Wildlife, son of John Madson, mm. Of one of the finest conservation and environmental writers and advocates there is out there. Occasionally writes for Pheasants Forever Journal. John Madson was his father. John Madson wrote beautifully on a variety of natural history subjects, as well as hunting and fishing. Where the Sky Began sounds like it's what is the meaning of life?
It does.
But it's not.
Okay.
It is for the pheasant hunter. And this was spawned by, you know, when Ryan said for this story, let's include books that hunters should just read. Mm-hmm. They don't have to be about hunting. Where the Sky Began is not about hunting, but it's about the tall grass prairie and the what it was and what it became and how it became that way.
Hmm.
And there's natural history. You learn about prairies. You learn about pollinators. You learn about settlement. You learn what Illinois looked like when the settlers came in. You have firsthand quotation settlers' accounts of savannas in southwestern Minnesota and northwestern Iowa. You get out onto the mid-grass prairie and then the short grass, that transition. So it's a it's a read. It's 300 pages, but it's history.
Hmm.
It's fact, it's not fiction, it's research, it's not thought, it's quotation and science, not dreaming and thinking and conjuring. It's the work of a scientist and a guy who could really write. John Madson was a long time.
And how old is that one?
Well, this edition is fresh. I think the initial one was, here it is, 1982.
Okay.
Where the Sky
St. Louis Cardinals won the World Series in 1982.
Wow. Got that in your back pocket. Go Cards.
Where the Sky Began, the Land of the Tall Grass Prairie, by John Madson.
Huh.
That's one you recommended to me that's still, it's second or third up on my large stack of books that's coming down the pipe, so I'm looking forward to that.
Very nice. Well, you did not disappoint. You went practical. Rather, it looks like meaning
sticking
of life
to his guns.
As I looked at the cover, but don't judge a book by the cover. All right, what you're going to steal my thunder, Sparks?
I've been going first. You want to go?
No,
you want to
no,
take
no,
this one?
You're fine because we both have in our hand a Sand County Almanac. Why'd you pick that in your top five?
I mean, we don't need to beat a dead horse, I don't think, but I mean, it's a this is one where if you're a hunter, you're an environmentalist, and I think this is a book that really proves that you can't be a hunter without being an environmentalist, and maybe vice versa. I mean, it's really one of the seminal works of environmental literature. I mean, it helped shape the environmental movement. It's environmentalism for hunters. I think that word environmentalism gets hijacked a lot by people that aren't truly environmentalists. You know, the big term that comes away from the book is a land ethic, which is sort of a philosophy that promotes stewardship of the land. And for me, it's interesting, you know, studying environmental history in graduate school. It's one of the first books that really pointed out there's this long history in thought of separating the human world from the natural world. And he's really the one that, at least in American literature, really said, you know what, everything is interconnected. The city is as much tied to the country as the country's tied to the city. Mm. And, you know, what happens there affects the other and vice versa. And it's really a new way of looking at the land and our place on the land. And, you know, I could almost flip to any page in here and read you an incredible, he's a great writer. if you haven't read this one, I think you've done entire podcasts just about this book, right? Yeah. I mean, it's
not that long ago.
Yeah.
It's the 75th anniversary.
So good.
Of the book. The Leopold Foundation, you can look it up online. Mm-hmm. They've got a special, I think it's running all year. You can buy a copy of a Sand County Almanac for $7.50 right now. And it also hit my top five carp. I know it's in your top five. You just knew it was going to hit here some point too.
Well, look for my feature in the fall issue of Pheasants Forever Journal, Leopold for the Pheasant Hunter. Mm-hmm. And I won't give everything away, but I'm going to take a picture of my, you guys have nice pristine copies. My mother bought mine in 1976. And so anyway,
I have another copy and I can't, again, somebody has it.
Carp was cool before, you know, before it was cool. I mean, yeah. That was really before this book took off. I mean, you should read that back then. That's
so
amazing.
Bob loves my analogies. When I was in college at the University of Wisconsin, Sports Illustrated did top party schools. And the University of Wisconsin didn't make the top 10, and their note at the end was, yeah, it's not fair to rate professionals versus amateurs. So the University of Wisconsin didn't make this list, and Sand County Almanac is the profession. It is. It doesn't even make the list because it has to be there. Mm. And so I'm glad you guys brought it, but I'm gonna love writing about it for the fall issue. Yeah. But
the reason I picked is really simple. Leopold had short hairs. you know, everything you both said, it is the connection between being a hunter, being a conservationist, an environmentalist, whatever term you want to put on it, having a deeper connection and understanding of how we treat the land is going to have reverberations for all of us today and into the future. And this book it's a book that if you haven't read, again, $7.50 right
now.
That's
the best $7.50 you'll ever spend.
Leopold Foundation, but it's also, it's a book that, I frequently read on an annual basis because it stands the test of time, and it's a very important book to, I guess, my philosophy on life, and I think that's probably pretty true of a lot of bird hunters. So that definitely made my top five. So as we go to a lightning round, which I didn't actually have planned, but you both have alluded to it.
Carp's idea.
Go ahead. What you got? Some extra books. What do you want to talk about? What other carp? What else is on your lightning round that you want folks to consider?
I'll start with this one. I've just got two, we'll make the round again. My first one is another Ben O. Williams. It's practicality. If you're thinking about becoming a bird hunter, and Bob, you talked about, if there is something that's going to become a river runs through it for upland hunting, it's going to be about bird dogs. Well, if you're want to become a bird hunter, you're a serious upland bird hunter, you are going to need a dog. And dogs, to me, are that barrier. Anybody can go to Orvis and buy a fly rod and look at a map and find a trout stream and watch a couple videos, and you're a fly fisherman. It's different to be a serious upland bird hunter. You need a dog. What scares people away? I can't train a dog. I could never be able to do that. So Ben O. Williams, Bird Dog, The Instinctive Training Method. I'm going to give it a one-sentence summary. Teach a dog basic obedience and take it hunting. That's all you need to do. So if you're afraid of having a bird dog, get Bird Dog, The Instinctive Training Method by Ben O. Williams.
Wild birds make a bird dog.
Mm-hmm. And, absolutely.
Yep. And what are people worried about? Oh, my dog's going to run away and I'm never going to be able to see it. It's like basic obedience, wild birds hunt.
That's a great point, though, about dogs being the biggest hurdle. And when you compared it to fly fishing, I think you can go buy a fly rod and go fishing, and when you get home, you can throw it over in the corner of the garage, and there it is. But a bird dog is a 24/7 commitment.
It's a lifestyle.
All the time. You can't just come home. I mean, you could. You could come home, put that dog in a kennel, and just feed it and never pay attention to it, and you're going to take it out hunting. But it's not going to be a good hunting dog, in my opinion.
Yeah, and so, if you have that mentality, don't get a bird dog.
No.
Yeah. Well,
that's it.
That's it.
This okay. lightning round.
I have one lightning round book, and I have my wife to thank about it. Otherwise, I wouldn't even have it. So I had my stack of books on my nightstand last night, and I'm kind of going through them, so maybe I could have something to contribute to the conversation today. And I looked over at her, and she kind of had this glint in her eye, and she's like, did you see the book I added to your stack? And I looked at the bottom, and she added Bird Brain by – I'm going to say Guy. You were saying Gee earlier, but Guy Kinaway, he's English. It's a very English book.
He's Guy.
Guy. And I had a great uncle named Guy, so I default to Guy. But this book is ridiculous in all the best ways. So it's fictional. The premise is the protagonist is a very wealthy English estate owner whose one love in life is having birds herded over the top of him and shooting high pheasants as they fly over on these driven hunts. And he has this big estate, and his brother-in-law and his sister plot to kill him, and they put charged up 20-gauge loads into his shell bag, and he shoots a 12-gauge, and he slips them in there, and he shoots the barrels, and it blows up, and it kills him.
Mm.
He then gets reincarnated as a pheasant on his own hunting estate and has to navigate not being killed in these bird drives, along with having to inform his children that he was killed by his plotting brother-in-law and sister to usurp his estate. And that sounds like a terrible book if you describe that to me, mm-hmm. but it's worth reading. You can, it's light. You can read it in an afternoon, and it's really funny. It's dry English humor.
Are you done with it?
Am I done with it?
Yeah. Did you? You're done.
My wife is a librarian, and she's going to want that back, so it go back on its exact place on the shelf. But
it's on my stack.
Okay.
Bird Brain.
I'm borrowing it.
Bird Brain.
Guy Kinaway.
Enjoy it.
Fill out my library card. Do you guys even know what a library card is?
Yes, I do. If you want to roll your eyes and laugh simultaneously, it's a good one.
That's my lightning round pick.
It's
got a wonderful cover, too. If you look it up, Bird Brain, Guy Kinaway, thanks. That's good.
It does sound like fun.
Yes.
I wasn't planning on a lightning round, but I did bring a couple others. Grouse and Lesser Gods, Ted Nelson Lundgren,
Minnesotan,
illustrated by Bob White. That's a good book. Among the Aspen, Northwoods Grouse and Woodcock Hunting by Mark Parman. You can borrow those.
The grouse hunter comes through.
The grouse hunter comes through. And I did go a bit off the chart with my final selection. Not really upland, but Wild Places. To me, I put this gentleman on the same level as Aldo Leopold in A Sand County Almanac, and that person is Sigurd Olsen.
Yeah.
Responsible for the Boundary Waters Wilderness area. Grouse hunting, spruce grouse hunting, it's up there. And I maybe to end on this note, because this speaks to me, whether you're talking about the Boundary Waters or the Snake River, Sonoyta, Arizona, pick your favorite place and put yourself here. When after days or weeks of travel, we modern voyagers find ourselves on a glaciated point, 100 or 1,000 miles from any town, and stand there gazing down the length of some unnamed lake, listening to the wild calling of the loons and watching the islands floating in the sunset. And there is fierce joy in our hearts. So whether you're looking out into the lakes and rivers or the uplands, I think we all find
fierce joy.
Fierce joy, meaning of life. Even in the practicality of putting two long tail feathers in the back of our vests. This was fun, fellas. Thank you.
Thanks.
It was. I could talk about books all day. So thanks for obliging.
All right, folks. We've got a shortened version of this back and forth in the Upland Bird Hunting Super Issue. There's a column on bird hunting book recommendations, written by Ryan Sparks in the Super issue. That is going into the mail early August.
August 1.
If folks are listening to this and you're thinking, boy, I haven't become a member of Pheasants Forever or Quail Forever yet, or I haven't renewed recently, please do so right now. Go to, you can be a Pheasants Forever member or a Quail Forever member. Either one gets you the Upland Bird Hunting Super issue. We have picked the mailing list for that issue, but because you're listening to this podcast, you got a special opportunity. Become a member, renew your membership right now, and then drop one of us an email and let us know that you signed up. If you want to become a member of Quail Forever, and you missed out on the super issue, drop Ryan Sparks, R Sparks with a K at the end, at quailforever.org. You become a member of Pheasants Forever, T Carpenter at pheasantsforever.org, or you can send me an email either way, Pheasants Forever, Quail Forever, Bob S at Pheasants Forever, or at Bob S at quailforever.org. Let us know you became a member and you want a copy of the super issue.
Include your address in there, because then we can just hit boom and send it up.
Right on.
Send
mailing address.
Your mailing address. Yeah.
Email address.
Because it's easy to write. A lot of folks write and say, yeah, I did it. Sign up. Please send me one. And they got it right back. Then send me your address. So put your address in there and it'll be in the mail. And, you know, a lot of people will, depending on when this podcast come out, you might even join up before the issue even goes out, but we'll assure it goes out. So yeah, send us an email and include your address.
Become a member of both.
Yep.
Great point. All right, folks, I'm Bob St. Pierre reminding you to always follow the dog. Something good will rise. Thanks for listening.